My pleasure to introduce the speaker for the evening. Way back there in June or July, I saw one of those pretty yellow gold flyers around, and I picked it up, and I was reading the activities and where he's going to be and everything, and I got to the list of the speakers, and there this name jumped right out at me, and I got so excited, Sharon Jay from Columbus, Ohio. A lot of you know that have been in meetings with me that I did my serious drinking and my even more serious recovery in Columbus, Ohio. So I had known Sharon for a long time. Of course, she didn't remember me much, but I remembered her because I had seen her, heard her lead and did her service work, and I was thrilled and excited. So I called Mary Ann and told her I knew this lady, and she said, "Well, good, we'll let you be her hostess." And I said, "Oh, yes, I would," right away. And then I wondered what I was supposed to do. Well, I'm doing a little bit of it anyway, the best that I can. And we're having a great time. And she's looking forward to visiting with you this evening. And I can't wait to hear her. So I give you Sharon Jay from Columbus, Ohio.
My name is Sharon Johnson, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi, everybody. Okay. Somebody told me that I could rock and roll tonight. And I thought, maybe not. Maybe not. My sobriety date is today, January the 19th, 1979. So, you know, it's a special gift to be in Alcoholics Anonymous and be sober tonight. But it's also a special gift to have asked, for Mary Ann to have asked me would I come down here after hearing me. And I want to thank the Coastal Bend Intergroup for inviting me down. We've had a good time. And Jenny and I, as usual, get in trouble on the way down. And I want to thank Jenny for coming with me. And she's heard me many times. But there's always one thing I tell her is I never know what I'm going to say. So it may be a little different. I don't know. I have a home group. It's the Columbus Sunday Breakfast Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. We'll be celebrating our 47th anniversary this coming April the 8th. Mm-hmm. If you're ever in Columbus and you're looking for something to do on a Sunday morning, you know, you can give me a call and come on by and see us. We meet in the VFW, and that's real appropriate. As you walk in, if you go to the right, you go to the bar. And there's someone there to greet you every Sunday morning. But if you go to the left, you'll come to our meeting. And if you go to the right and we think you ought to be at the left, we'll come get you. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor. My sponsor is very active in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I've heard it said in these rooms, if you like your sponsor, get another one. I love my sponsor. I always tell her she's the sister I never wanted. But what I love about her is she's active in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. She does a lot of service work. She believes in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and she believes in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous as it's written in the Big Book. And as long as we keep those things together, she'll be my sponsor. The other thing I like about her is she has no problem calling me on my stuff. You know, I can call her and say hello a certain way, and she'll say, "What's going on?" You know, and I used to go, "Oh, nothing," until she said, "Okay, fine, let's talk about something else." And then, you know, we're selfish and self-centered, and you have to talk about my problem. You know, I'm going to tell you a little bit about what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like today. And it's important to me to qualify for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's important for, number one, I want anyone out there to know that I do know if they have a problem with alcohol, that this is a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and not Emotions Anonymous or Psychotic Anonymous or whatever else. I also would qualify for this program because maybe there's a new person out there who had the problems that I had when I came through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. And maybe there's something that I'll say that they can relate to. And maybe they'll stay till the miracle happens. The other reason I qualify for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is because I'm a drunk. And the further I get away from that last drink, the easier it is to believe I'm okay. And I need to go back there and tell you a little bit about me so that I can remember what got me here. and so that I don't one day think that I don't need to be here. So I'm going to qualify. And the other thing is, people, I hear people say, I'm not going to qualify because we all knew how to drink. If I knew how to drink, I wouldn't be in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm 52 years old. I was born in Columbus, Ohio. I swore I'd never go back to Columbus. Been back there 29 years. I'm an only child, and there's no big deal about that, but on the way to the fellowship, that was a big deal, you know. Of course, anything that got me attention was a big deal. I believe I was born selfish, self-centered, and self-involved. And I came out saying, look out, world, here I am. And the other thing was, and you owe me. Now, I don't know where that came from, but I believe that's the way I was. I'm an adopted child. There's no big deal about that, but I made it into one. Got me a lot of free drinks. Got me a lot of free medical help, you know, because I could go to psychologists and psychiatrists and I could, you know, put on how unloved I was. And, you know, I have this abandonment problem. I just had a problem. And the problem was me. But, you know, here lately I found out who my natural parents are, you know, and that's okay today. It took me 52 years to do it. And I went down to get a birth certificate, and I said, you know, what do I have to do to get my adoption papers? And they said, give us $20 and proof of your identity, and you can get it. So I had to go think about that for a while. It's too easy. But I got them, and, you know, and that's okay. I think what I needed to know, it answered what I needed to know. You know, and I look an awful lot like both sides of my adopted parents' families, you know. You know how we are. I'm going looking for something in the family, you know. Maybe one of them is really my natural parents, you know. And I got the papers, and it's not. And it's real funny because I thought I would feel something different when I got the papers, and I didn't. Because of you, I have a God of my own understanding. And because of you, I believe that that God of my understanding always wanted the best for me and always had good things in store for me. And the day I was born, whatever environment I was born in was not the right environment for me. And because my God loves me, he took me out of that environment, and he placed me with the people that raised me. And for that, I'm very grateful. And so I don't need to go running, stirring up the past. You know, I'm not ignoring it. It's just not that important. I know who I am today. And I know where I belong today, and I belong in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I always say that's why my name has two A's in it, because they knew when I was born that I was on my way. So when I found out I was adopted, several things happened, and one of them was I got real scared, you know. And I heard someone told me, and I don't know who it was now. I used to be able to tell you who it was. But, you know, I have a disease of perception, and since I didn't like this one cousin, I always said she said it. She didn't say anything. But somebody said if you don't be careful and do what they want, they'll send you back. And I didn't know where back was, but I didn't want to go. And so I was always afraid. I was afraid of everything and everybody. The other thing was that I got angry. But I believe they're going to discover an anger gene, and I was born with it. And being selfish, self-centered, and self-involved, I got angry every time a little two-letter word was said to me. No. So by the time I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, since a lot of people had said no to me, I was in a rage, you know. And you all taught me how to be angry, because I didn't know how to do that. I just went from here to there real quick. And I don't know about you, but when I came through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was not the sweetest talking individual in the world. You know, the other thing that happened to me is that I felt less than. There had to have been something wrong with me for my natural parents to have given me up. And I spent all my life trying to prove that I was okay. I spent all my life trying to prove to you that I was as good as you, even though at times I thought I was better than you. But all the time I felt less than you. And that's confusion from the very beginning, and that's the ism. You know, I don't have a problem with drinking today. I haven't had a drink in 22 years. But I sure have a problem with thinking. I don't know about you, but I've never been able to get up and not think. Yeah. And my mind is a beautiful thing. It'll wake me up in the middle of the night and say, listen, remember what so-and-so said a week ago? Let's talk about it. So why I'm here and why I talk so much about the feelings I had before I had a drink because that's what I'm working on today. That's what keeps me in these rooms is the ism. I have to come here, you know, because I need to continue to work on my thinking on a daily basis. The guy that talked earlier, and I forgot his name, and that's not, I have senior moments every once in a while, so I don't remember everything. But when he talked about the mind, you know, I was thinking, yeah, I can relate to that. You know, I was the type of person, I heard this said, and I stole it. Don P. from Colorado said at a conference one time that he could take out a chair, put a TV on it, never turn it on, and have a good program. And I could relate to that because I spent all my life up here. I don't know about you, but I was always up here. When I came through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous and I told people I couldn't remember my childhood, we have so many psychologists in the rooms, they told me, they said, well, you probably have some deep, dark secret that you're trying to hide. So I went out and tried to find it, and I disrupted my whole family, and I didn't find nothing. What I do think today is that the reason I don't remember my childhood was I never participated in it. I was always up here. You know, wherever I was somewhere else. You know, and if I saw you, I always wanted what you had. Then I'd get what you had, and it wasn't that great. Because I look over there, and somebody else had a little bit more. I was reading the grapevine one time when this kid talked about tennis shoes. And they were talking about how tennis shoes were the rage. And that this guy said, all I wanted was those tennis shoes, you know, and I had to save my money, and I had to do all these things, and I got the money, and I got these tennis shoes, and I put them on, and they didn't look as good on my feet, and I could relate to that. When I got what you had, it wasn't good enough. Nothing was ever good enough, and one of the gifts I've gotten in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous is I have everything I need, and the longer I stay here, the less I want. So I'm getting real content with me. But on the way to the fellowship, I wanted to be everybody and everything but me. I could sit in a church and I'd be in a cathedral. Now, I've never even been in a cathedral except once in Spain, and we'll talk about that later. And I was asked to leave Spain. I was in college, you know, and I knew everything, and I didn't think they spoke English. And I was over there when Franco was in charge, and I talked about the Catholic Church. You know, I really didn't talk about the church. I was talking about this cathedral I was in and all these rubies and diamonds and stuff, and they were talking about this crown they had, and I said something, and I'm cleaning it up. I said, I'd like to see the person that can wear that. Bring them here now. And then I had an attitude problem, so they asked me to catch the next train out. And you look at all those guns you get on the train. I have a lot of courage, but I'm not stupid. But anyway, I've lived in my head a lot. So, you know, I grew up and I just didn't participate a lot. My cousins and I sit around and talk about our childhood, and they had a different childhood than me. And we were together most of the time. I don't know, but I don't remember. And they'll go, do you remember such and such? And I get that look, and they say, never mind. So, there was nothing going on. I said all that to say my childhood was normal. The only thing that wasn't normal in my childhood was me, you know. And my parents did the best that they could with what they had. And what they had was me. And on the way to the fellowship, I'm not too sure they knew what they had, you know. Because I didn't know. I didn't know, you know. I wasn't one of those kids that grew up and knew what I wanted to be, you know. I just was whatever you wanted me to be. I thought so little of myself, and I needed your approval so badly that I could be whatever you wanted, you know. I took ballet for 11 years. You'd never know it to see me move now, but anyway. And I did it because I got those positive strokes. You know, look at Sharon, isn't she cute, you know? And I thought, yeah, I am, but anyway. I took piano for 10 years, don't play a lick. You know, I did things that I had to do because, number one, my parents told me I was going to do it, and I don't know about you, but in our household, we had roles, and my mother was the housewife and mother, and she took care of the house. My father was the breadwinner. He went to work every day and never asked him whether he liked it or not because I enjoyed the money he brought home, and I was the kid. And when I came through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was a 31-and-a-half-year-old kid, you know, because I never had to do anything. And I'm not knocking my parents. That's just the way it was. I'm not an alcoholic because I'm adopted. I'm not an alcoholic because I'm a woman. I'm not an alcoholic because I'm African-American. I'm not alcoholic for any reason other than I picked up a drink. And I thought I had the answer. And when I picked up that drink, I couldn't stop. And when I wanted to stop, I didn't know how to stop. And when I did stop, I couldn't stay stopped. And that's why I'm in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I was 16 years old, we moved from Columbus, and I wasn't happy. How could they do that to me? Never once dawned on me that my mother wasn't happy either, because she had lived all her life in Columbus. And my father's from Bermuda, and he met my mother in this like a fairy tale. He fell in love, and he became a United States citizen. He went and fought a war he didn't have to fight, so he could get his citizenship. So he wasn't happy about going to St. Louis either, and I never thought about that. How could you do this to me? You know. And all the way there, I said, I'm not going to like this place. So I used to call it, early in sobriety, I used to call it St. Louis Misery. Because that's how it was to me, you know. And I went there, you know. Today I realized that most teenagers don't like to move, just be uprooted and moved. Because, I don't know about you, but I had my own little group of friends, and they accepted all my idiosyncrasies and how I was. You know, and I could go places because my family was there. And anywhere my cousins went, I was allowed to go. But when we moved to St. Louis, my cousins didn't move with me, so I didn't get to go anywhere, you know. And my mother was afraid of the city. It was completely different from Columbus and our little village that I was raised in. So she wasn't very comfortable there. And I'm sure I took on a lot of that. I was already scared of everything anyway. And so I went to St. Louis, and I didn't have people skills, and I graduated from high school because that's what you did. It wasn't a discussion in my household. But you know, while I was there, I want to tell you two things that tell me how sick I was, and I haven't had a drink yet. I wanted to be a nun. And my parents couldn't understand that because I wasn't Catholic. And I'm going to tell you what my thinking said. I've gone to St. Louis. I can't do nothing. I live like a nun. I might as well be a nun. So I wanted to be a nun. And I'm sure the Catholic Church said, And seeing as I'm one of those stubborn people that came through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous and didn't follow directions too well, I'm sure I'm glad I didn't become one either. So when that didn't work, I decided I wanted to be a writer, and I was going to write like Edgar Allan Poe. Loved him. You know, I realized today why I liked him. He was an alcoholic, an addict, and totally insane. And I related, you know. And I'll tell you the truth, today is Edgar Allan Poe's birthday. My God has a sense of humor. But God was smart enough for me not to find that out till a couple of years ago. Because if I had found it out early in sobriety, I'd have been in Maryland at his grave on his birthday. You would have thought I knew him. Yeah. Well, anyway, so that didn't work either, but I used to write like that, and I would give it to my mother, and she'd read it, and she'd say things like, have you done this? Are you thinking about doing this? So I heard her tell my father one night, don't be careful with Sharon. She's sensitive. I don't know about you, but I was sensitive all the way to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I walked through the doors, I tried to be sensitive. And God put old-timers in my life who didn't care about my sensitivity. In fact, I say now, I think they had a game. Let's do something to Sharon and see how sensitive she can be today. So you learn that sensitive, you just don't deal with it. But I didn't know that then. And so anyway, I graduated from high school and I went to college. And my parents sent me there to get an education. I went looking for a man. That was another addiction on the way to the fellowship. All you had to say to me was, you look good. And I went, I'm in love. You know, and then I could look across a crowded room and I'd say, he's mine. He didn't even know who I was, but he's mine. And I did whatever it took till he became mine. And then I'd look across the crowded room and think, that one over there looks a little bit better. So I would do a few things that I know this one doesn't like so that he quit me. And then when he quit me, I could play those sad songs, you know, Nancy Wilson, you know. I could cry for about an hour because I already had the next one lined up. And I don't know about you, but that didn't go away instantly when I came through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous either. But I'll share that with a woman who wants to know after the meeting. So I went looking for this man, and I found several. But what I found that really, really became the knight in shining armor, became my Rhett Butler, and became everything to me was alcohol. I went to college, and for 1 year, I did what you're supposed to do. You go to classes, study, all that. I was very, very boring. And what nobody knew was I went on that college campus, and I just knew all these kids knew all the answers, and I didn't even know the questions. I heard a guy say it was like God was standing behind the podium, and God said, I'm going to tell you what it takes to be an adult. And he got up and went to the bathroom. And when he came back, God said, and that's what it takes. I could relate to that. Everybody knew. I didn't know. But I wouldn't tell you I didn't know. That was another thing I didn't do. I never let you know what I didn't know. I knew everything. Just ask me. And so I spent an awful lot of time making up stuff. Today I realized some of those people were just as sick as I was because they took my advice. Here's a person that ain't done nothing. And you come to me with your relationship problems and I would tell you how to handle it. And couldn't do it myself. But I went to a party one night, and I was getting ready to do everything that went against everything I'd been raised to. So I say I took a drink to make unacceptable behavior acceptable. And I took a drink. And for the first time in my life, I fit. I don't know about you, but when it went down and it hit, my thought was, ooh, I don't like this. And then it hit. And I thought, well, maybe if I just drink one more, I could get used to this. So I drank another one. And I will tell you point blank, if alcohol had continued to do for me what it did for me the first night I took a drink, I would not be in Alcoholics Anonymous. I loved it. For the first time in my life, I was comfortable in my own skin. For the first time in my life, I fit in anywhere I went. For the first time in my life, I could dance. For the first time in my life, I could do a lot of things, and I won't go into that either. But you see, what happened was it didn't keep doing it. And what happened was alcohol turned on me long before I got here, and I didn't know it. And it wasn't the alcohol that was the problem. It was people. If you would just do what I said do, the way I said do it, as quickly as I said do it, I'd be okay. And there were people in my life that were doing that, and I wasn't okay. So alcohol did for me what I couldn't do for myself. A year later, I got introduced, and I'll touch on this briefly because it's part of my story and I need to remember it, but I got introduced to this little funny pill. And when I came through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, I said I didn't have a problem with pills. All my pills were prescription. Then I've been in these rooms a while, and I realized, yeah, they were, but they weren't necessarily mine. I don't know about you, but it's not normal to go visit people's houses and go in their medicine cabinet and check out what they got. See, my doctor gave me, I had migraine headaches on my way to the fellowship, and today I realized why. I never shared a feeling I had in my life with you. I stuffed it forever, And I had that English demur, I was so cool. I was dying, but I was so cool. And I never told you anything, so I'm stuck in all these feelings. And today I realized if I stuck like that, it's got to go somewhere. And I started having headaches. And so when I got to Wilberforce, the doctor said, here, take one of these. Now, he said, take one of these. And I'm sitting on my bed, and my major by this time was psychology. And so I think a lot of alcoholics major in psychology because you're trying to find yourself, And I came in Alcoholics Anonymous, and you told me what I was, and I didn't want to hear that. But anyway, it said alcohol will intensify the effect. Now, I'm not sure if it said don't drink taking this pill that I would have done it anyway, but it said alcohol will intensify this effect, and I can remember sitting there looking at that pill, looking at that bottle, and I can remember saying, I wonder how. So I took a drink and took a pill, and I never took any more medicine with water, and I told people it's because I didn't like the way it tasted. And, today I realized it did for me what I couldn't do for my... It got me there even quicker. And what I took allowed me to drink more. It allowed me to drink longer. When I came through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, people talked about hangovers, and I did not know what you were talking about. And my sponsor said, well, how could you? In order to have a hangover, you got to get sober. I have one of those sponsors. And it's true, because I was never without something in my system. But I loved alcohol. So I went through Wilberforce like that tornado in the big book. I went looking for that man, and everyone that saw me left. And so I always say I prayed for a man, and God gave me a job. I was not a happy camper. I did not think that I should have to work. That's why I was looking for the man. Because I wanted somebody that was going to give me what I thought I was accustomed, what I needed. Okay, show you how sick I was. I know a lot of you have seen Gone with the Wind, and you've seen the plantation. You know, I wanted one of them. And even sicker, I wanted slaves.
Yeah.
And I know that you know that if I'd have been on that plantation, I would not have owned it. And see, God knew what kind of drunk I was going to be, so he never gave me a house that had stairs. So I could just imagine that scene with Rhett Butler and them, you know, in that winding staircase and me stone drunk. And my starting at the top, coming all the way down to the bottom, and him saying, good. So God never gave it to me. But I got this job, and I need to describe to you how I looked. It was the end of the 60s, first part of the 70s, and I liked H. Rapp Brown, Stokely Carmichael, Angela Davis, Black Panthers, anything nobody else liked. I didn't know anything about any of it. I played a lot of roles in my life. I did whatever it took to fit in. So, of course, now I'm militant. And if you're going to be militant, you have to look it. So I wore all black. And people thought it was making a statement. I wore all black because somebody told me it makes you look slimmer. But I would tell you it's because of the condition of the world. You know, we're dramatic when we're using. I can be dramatic sober, too, so anyway. I wore a black power medallion around my neck so that you'd know what I stood for. And if you'd have asked me, I couldn't have told you. I had a fro that was higher than Angela Davis's because I worked at it. And I wore those glasses, those Foster Grant sunglasses, you know, the mirrored kind, where I could see you but you couldn't see me. And I had that walk. I had that walk. Can't do it no more. But I could do it then, and I was angry. And people thought I was angry about the condition of the world. I was angry about the condition of my world. I had to work. And I popped the pill and took a drink and went on my job. And wondered why they didn't want me there. But you know, we're cunning, baffling, and powerful when we drink. So I said, I'll find a way. So I bought alcohol and I had parties. And I used to just love to give parties, you know. And then I could talk about you the next day, too. If I could remember. And after about a year, I realized I was going to lose that job. You know, you got a year of probation. And I told him, I said, if I could, I was up in Akron, right around the corner from where Founders Day is now. Of course, if anybody had said anything to me about Founders Day or anything, Alcoholics Anonymous or anything, at that point in time, they would have had to listen to their history, and I would have altered it quite a bit. And so nobody was telling me about my drinking, but I knew I was getting ready to lose the job, and I remember going in talking to my manager and telling her I wouldn't act this way if I could go back down to Columbus where my family is, you know, and she said she fell for it. And what she didn't understand was I had made a choice between alcohol and my family 2 years prior to that, and alcohol won, because I don't know about you, I hear people talk about a drug of choice, I have no idea what you're talking about. I didn't have a choice when it came to alcohol. The idea that there was alcohol around me and I couldn't drink it never crossed my mind. You know, people talk about how much they drank. I'm amazed to hear people do that. You know, I don't know how much I drank. I just drank. When I came through the doors and you talked about a morning drink, I had no idea what you were talking about. I never checked the clock. I just drank. You know, if I woke up and wanted a drink, I've got a drink. There wasn't no certain time of the day. Wasn't really any reason sometimes, you know, I just drank. So I'm going down to Columbus and I make a decision. And if you've ever made this kind of a decision, you might want to check it out because you might have a problem. But I made a decision I wasn't going to take a drink for a year. What I know today is normal people don't have to make those kind of decisions. You know, when I came through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, my husband didn't stop drinking because I did. I'm the alcoholic. But I've never seen him get a calendar and say, I'm not going to drink for X number of days and start marking off the calendar. I did that. You know, and he doesn't get sick, physically sick, and have to go to doctors. I did that. And I had everything that you could think of, because by now I bought a medical book. And I always kind of combined all the, you know, the symptoms so that you could never do a diagnosis, you know. And I picked my doctors this way. If I went to a doctor, the doctor said, you have a problem, let's talk about it, I never went back. If I went to a doctor and the doctor said, you have a problem, can you take? I liked him. But by now, I like the ones that said, you have a problem, what can you take? Because I could tell you, you know. And I have to admit to everybody, I never took anything the way it was prescribed. They said, take one every 4 hours. I took four every hour. Never once crossed my mind I could kill myself or die. That didn't cross my mind. When I was at Wilberforce, they told me I was dangerous, and I didn't understand that. Today I do. I never thought about the consequences of my actions. I never thought about how it affected you or anybody else, because I never thought about how it affected me. So if I didn't think about how it affected me, how could I possibly think about how it affected you? And I went through people, places, and things just like they didn't matter, because they didn't. It was all about me. You know, and I need to remember that, because if I go out here and take a drink tonight, that's what happens. It's all about me. You know, so anyway, I don't know if I'd lasted a year or not, but I took a drink and made a decision. And I don't know about you, but drinking and thinking never went together. But I wanted to get married. And I want to share something about this job. This job that I quit the day I put my hand up and took the oath, I quit it. They just didn't know it. Last Wednesday, I had 30 years on that job. And that's because of you people. Because, see, they saw the end of my drinking. You know, and they know something happened. They weren't too sure what. And then they saw me without alcohol and pills. And they weren't sure that they wanted what had happened. And they allowed me to keep coming back until they found out that Alcoholics Anonymous works. You know, and it's a whole different relationship on my job today. I go to work today. I went to work sometimes, well, before, maybe. Near the end, if I went past my favorite bar, I had to go in and say hi first before I could go to work. And sometimes alcohol said, they don't really appreciate you anyway, so you just stay here with me. And since it was the person that I thought the most of at that point in time, I did it. So I go to work now. Well, anyway, I decided I wanted to get married, which was no new decision, but I put it out to my family, and they went looking for a husband. And I really think they went looking for a caretaker because they knew something was wrong. They weren't quite sure what. And I met my husband. And again, because of you. If we make it to June the 2nd, we'll have been married 28 years. And that's a miracle to me because he got the brunt of my drinking. He saw something happened. And again, he wasn't too sure what was happening. And he wasn't too happy with it for a long time. Because I didn't change instantly when I walked through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. I did not come in, sit down, and become Miss Susie Homemaker. You know, I came in and I was raging. But anyway, we got married. 2 years later, I had a little girl. She's now 25 years old. She's the light of my life, but when she was born, I didn't know what to do with her. She cried too much. She wanted to eat. She got more attention than I did. And I didn't like that. I'm selfish, self-centered, and self-involved. Plus, I never knew about taking care of kids because I'm an only child. And I had parents in my life that did everything for me. So I don't know what to do with this. I don't know how to be a mother. I didn't know how to be a wife. And I went to work because I wanted to drink. That was why I went to work. And it didn't get any better for a long time. In January of 1978, right after we had our blizzard up there in Columbus, man, I hated that. I couldn't get out the house. I was not happy. But my husband went to work anyway. So I said, well, if he can go to work, when he comes home, we can go out to my father-in-law's. And the reason I wanted to go out to my father-in-law's, he was a practicing alcoholic. And he was my favorite person because he knew exactly what I drank, anything. And I remember waiting all day because we didn't have a telephone. I don't know about you, but when I drank, I called people. And I called people I don't remember calling, said things I don't know I said, you know, and then I got the bill. And it got to a period in my life where bills just went where bills go, in the trash can. So we didn't have a phone, so I'm home all day with this child. And when Butch came home, I said, let's go see Dad. So he said, okay, we can go out and stay over there overnight. And I said, okay, so we went out there. And I don't remember the rest of the blizzard. But things were getting rough at our house. We were playing those games that alcoholic households play. You know, we were playing hide and seek. I'd hide the bottle, he'd seek it. we were playing Mark the Bottle. He would mark the bottle, you know, tell me don't drink it below that point. I'd say, okay. I'd drink it below the point, go to the state store, buy another bottle, come back, fill up that bottle, try to get it to the point, miss and drink both of them. But, you know, all during this, I think about sometimes when I came through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous and had some of these old-timers in my life that I said had more time sober than dirt and that they had forgotten all the fun we had out there. Does this sound like fun to you all? You know, all behind everything I was doing, there was something, I knew there was something wrong. I just didn't know how to fix it. You know, I knew that my drinking wasn't right, but I didn't know how to stop it. People told me about my drinking, and they said, just stop. And I'd say, how long? And somebody'd say, well, let's see if you can not take a drink for 2 weeks. I can do anything for 2 weeks. They didn't know I was taking pills. So, I mean, I would just be there. You know, and 2 weeks ago, they said, see, that wasn't so bad. You can have a drink. They had a drink. I had a drunk, you know. So in January of 78, I decided I had to go out and get out there. I couldn't drink at home in peace. This man would not let me kill myself in peace. And I went out on the street. And I'm not a street person, and I don't need to take you through all that, but I'll tell you what, I'm glad I went out there. It got me here quicker. I ran away from my protection because my husband was the type of person that made excuses, justified all my actions. He loved me, you know, and he still does. You know, he's not the alcoholic in my household, so I work on me on a daily basis because I never want to get to that point where one day I say, you know, I think I want to drink. He doesn't understand the disease of alcoholism. I never want to be in that spot. And he doesn't have to. He's not the alcoholic. I am. And I went out on the street. Lost me out there. Whatever was left was gone. It got to the point I never knew what I was going to do. I never knew where I was going. I never knew who I was going to wake up with, where I was going to wake up, why I was going to wake up. And it came to the point I didn't want to wake up. You know, I don't know about you, but I wanted to die. But I had tried it. I had tried. That was another addiction. Every time something got on my nerves and I didn't want to accept responsibility, I'll show you, I'll kill me. And it never worked. So at this point, I no longer was trying. But I know today that I put myself in some dangerous situations wishing somebody would get rid of the pain. I didn't come to Alcoholics Anonymous because one day I woke up and said, I've had enough, I'm going to get straight, I'm going to Alcoholics Anonymous. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous because the pain brought me here. You know, and I'm one of these people, I don't talk about churches and I don't talk about psychiatrists because I was lucky, you know. And I don't talk about the medical profession because they did what they did based on what I was telling them. And I had a disease of perception. And so my perception was warped, and they treated what I was saying. They didn't know, and I didn't know. I got so bad out there that, you know, my husband tells me he knows everything I did out there. I think that's so funny. But he probably knows more than I know, because I was a blackout drinker by the time I came through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I loved the blackouts. And the reason was, when you told me I did something, I'd say, you know, I was drunk, you know, I didn't mean to do it. Well, you mean I said that? I didn't mean to say that. Yes, I did. You know, there were times that alcohol did not make me do anything I didn't want to do. There were times alcohol gave me the courage to do what I wanted to do, and I just wouldn't do it. And then I'd get drunk and do it, and then you call me on it, and I could say, you know, I was drunk. Forgive me. That's something I don't say anymore. I don't say I'm sorry anymore. Because I was very sorry on the way to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I try to change my actions if I hurt somebody. But I went out there and I ended up on the psychiatric ward of a local hospital. And the only reason why I went to the psychiatrist is because I was going to jail. I was on bail on an OMVI and I had an automobile accident and I knew I was going to jail and I could not do jail. And somebody had recommended the psychiatrist a couple of years prior and I went to him. And this psychiatrist knew about Alcoholics Anonymous. And not only did he know about it, he approved of it. And he sent alcoholics to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and he knew he had an alcoholic, but he knew he had such an egotistical, self-centered, self-involved individual, he never called me an alcoholic. He just asked me, could I go in the hospital? And I did hospitals well. So I went in the hospital. Then they shut the door. And I realized it didn't have a knob on my side. And I wasn't too happy. You know, and after a few days, I made up excuses. I have to go to see my lawyer. I have to go buy clothes for my daughter. I have to do this. I have to do that. And every time I came back, I was drunk. And it wasn't an alcoholic ward. It was a psychiatric ward. And they were not happy with me. They were not happy with me. And he let me stay there. I signed myself in. Do not even recall doing that. And I could have signed myself out at any point. Didn't know that. Was only supposed to stay for 10 days. Didn't know that either. I stayed 6 weeks. But see, I could get real comfortable. I could get real comfortable. But I stayed in there long enough to run into myself. And one night I went out, and my husband and I had one of our usual arguments. And I went back, and somebody said, "How was your evening?" And I took off running down the wards and tried to kill myself. And I came to on the phone talking to my minister. My minister knew about Alcoholics Anonymous. He approved of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he told me to come to church. And the reason I say he asked me could I come to church, he had asked me one day to come to church sober. And if I couldn't come to church sober, then don't come. And I said he threw me out of church. But see, what he didn't understand, I told you I had no choice when it came to alcohol. So I was no way I could go to church sober, so I just stopped going. But he told me to come to church that day, and I did, and I met the woman and her husband. The woman was my first sponsor, and her husband was one of them old-timers that wanted to talk about this thing called sobriety. I'm still trying to talk about drunkenness, and he's still talking about the big book, and he was getting on my nerves. So we didn't talk for a long time. And before he died, he told me he didn't think I was going to make this fellowship because he thought I was mentally retarded. But see, I didn't talk around him. After I found out that he and I had nothing in common, I didn't talk about him. Talk around. But I don't know about you either, but I came through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous with a full-blown committee in my head. And several different voices telling me several different things. And I didn't come because I wanted to. His wife asked me to go to a meeting, and I knew the psychiatrist wasn't going to let me go anywhere else. And when I first came through the doors, I told you I chose to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. I had run out of options. And so I came to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm not one of those people that walked in, sat down, found my home, and been happy ever since. I walked in, sat down, heard the laughter, and got totally ticked off. There was nothing funny in my life. Didn't you see me come through the door? And we went to meetings, and I didn't go out of choice. I went because, well, people I ran with early in sobriety gave you no choice about meetings. They just told you, "I'm picking you up at 6 o'clock. We're going to an 8 o'clock meeting." Never did understand that. Why pick me up at 6 o'clock for an 8 o'clock meeting right in town? And we would go, and they would talk about Alcoholics Anonymous all the way to the meeting. We would get there. They'd tell me what to do, and I'd do it because they were older than me. And I always respected my elders. And see, my God knew that was something I would do. I respect my elders. And so I would do what they said to do. Now, my mind and my committee and I were having a different meeting. And we were saying things like, "They can't be this happy. They have to be drinking. If they're not drinking, they're popping pills." You know, I mean, and then there was, you know, "Look at her. She thinks she's cute. Look at him. He is cute." "Let's go over in the corner and talk about the third step." That's another lead. But anyway, so I came to meeting. They said, "Read the book." And I said, "Yeah, but." I say, "Yes to you, but." They said, "Pray." And I said, "Yeah, but I don't get down on my knees to nothing or nobody." Didn't realize I came through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous walking on my feet and crawling on my face. Alcohol, I had been down on my knees many a night behind alcohol. You know, alcohol was the god of my understanding. Alcohol told me when I'd go to bed, told me when I'd get up. I'd want to go to work. It'd say, "No, you're not." I'd want to sleep, and it would say, "Wake up. I want to talk to you." I would be at home, say, "I'm going to stay at home tonight," and I'd take a drink, and it would say, "Let's go see what's happening." And I'd get out there, and I was going to be nice, and it would say, "There's nothing happening. Let's start something." You know. So it controlled my every... And when I wasn't drinking, I was thinking about it. You know. But I wasn't going to get on my knees to a God of my understanding. And one of the things I've learned in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous is I'd rather get down on my knees willingly than be knocked down by my God. And he does get my attention. Anyway, I stayed sober for a little while. I came in November of 78, and I went to meetings, and my committee and I kept having meetings, and my committee told me they missed me out on the avenue, and my committee told me, "Since you've gotten through Thanksgiving and Christmas and New Year's without a drink, you deserve a drink." So So I went back out in January of 1979, and I went back out to get drunk and to die on the streets of Columbus because it didn't work. You see, I came through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous wanting to know how to drink and not have the problem. That's all I wanted. I never wanted to give up alcohol. I just didn't want to have the problem. And you all weren't talking about that. You said something I didn't like. You said, don't drink. And I didn't know how to not drink. So I went back out to die on the streets of Columbus. And my God said, I've had enough of you. And this is where I hit my physical bottom. I had enough of you, and I took a drink and went to take another drink, and I could no longer physically hold alcohol. I don't know about you, but that's a heck of a spot to be in. You can't drink, and you can't not drink, and you don't know what to do. So I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous, and the only reason was you all said, keep coming back. You were the only people inviting me back. Other people saw me coming. They found ways to disappear, you know, but you said, keep coming back, so I came back. I wasn't happy, though. I still wasn't reading the book. I had a sponsor because I was in a meeting and you all kept saying, do you have a sponsor? And I'd say, no. Well, get one. Okay. Next meeting, do you have a sponsor? No. Well, get one. So Mary picked me up one day and we went to a meeting and we were sitting at the meeting. They said, get a sponsor. And I said, you're my sponsor, aren't you? And she said, yeah. I said, okay. That was a sponsorship to me. And what it did was it got you all off my back. You'd ask me if I had a sponsor. I said, yes, Mary, who was married to God. And nobody said anything. It was okay. I did everything they said don't do in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and if you want to know what that is, come talk to me. Let me share my experience, strength, and hope. Let me tell you how you can almost go stark raving mad in Alcoholics Anonymous and not take a drink. And I did that because I was so sick. You know, I don't beat myself up about it. It's things that had to happen to me for me to take this program as seriously as I do today. And I am dead serious about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not that serious about myself, but I am dead serious about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I tell people in Columbus all the time, I want it to stay the way it is. I want the big book, the first 164 pages, to stay just where it is. I don't mind the stories being changed because even Bill and Bob said it has to be reflective of our society. And we need to update the stories, you know. And I know, don't touch my big book. I don't care about the stories, but don't touch the first 164 pages. I'm on every page of that big book. Every page on that big book is me. And when I came through the doors, I played those games people play. It's not written very well. Let me try to rewrite it. It's about men. It's not talking about women. It's about white men. It's not talking about African American people. My book talks about the disease of alcoholism. And it doesn't care what color you are, what sex you are. It talks about the disease. And as long as I stay on that, I'm okay. I don't worry about all the other stuff. That book is as relevant today as it was when it was written. And, you know, it tells me what I am. I'm selfish, self-centered, self-involved, egotistical, you know, and a child. You know, and I'm just trying to grow up in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. But anyway, went along like that, doing everything they said don't do. Don't read the book. Don't use my sponsor. Don't do anything. Ran around, meeting, sharing, on the inner group in Columbus. Did all these things. At least I was in the rooms, but I'm still not doing. And at 2.5 years to almost 3 years, I wanted to die in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. You can go stark raving crazy. The pain hadn't gone anywhere. I was one of those people that I put on that face when I walked in a meeting. And people said, how you doing? I'm just doing just fine. How's Butch? Oh, let go and let God. How was your day? You know, just a day at a time. And you know what happens if you carry all that crap and you're in rooms like these and you do know the difference? And you don't share, and you don't tell somebody that you're in pain, and you don't tell somebody that you're hurting. I don't know about you, but what I wanted to do is I wanted to die. And I never want to forget that. I know today I really didn't want to die, but I didn't know how to live. And I had to do it. I became hopeless again in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I called this other lady that I had told with my smart mouth that I wouldn't call her if she was the last person on earth. And she wasn't the last one, but I sure called her. And I told her I wanted to kill myself. Now, this is what I heard. and she has never said anything. She will not say anything. I heard, go ahead. And I thought, well, isn't that something? You all said, call if you need help. I call and you tell me to kill myself. That's my perception. She told me she was going to go to bed and she was going to pray for me. And she was going to thank God that she wasn't me. And then she was going to get up the next morning and ask and thank God for letting her wake up. And ask God to let her stay sober for the rest of the 24 hours. She was going to do what she needed to do around her house. And then she was going to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if I wanted to die, go ahead. And God said, will you be my sponsor? Because I swore I wasn't asking her nothing. And so she told me the things I tell the women that I sponsor today. She told me if I wanted to stay sober, she was going to help me. But if I wanted to continue to play the games I've been playing in Alcoholics Anonymous and live the way I've been living in Alcoholics Anonymous, to go find somebody else. She told me, you're going to read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and you're going to read the written word. You're not going to read what you think it is. And if I wasn't going to read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, I needed to go find somebody else. She told me I was going to work the steps. And she said, you know, they say this is a suggested program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm going to tell you right now, nothing's suggested to you. You are going to work the steps. She told me I was going to take why out of my vocabulary because I was very good at asking you why and why not. And she said the reason I did why so much is because I like to play mental gymnastics and I could play in that head of mine, which was a dangerous neighborhood to be in alone, and I could just play with the word why and never take the action. And she told me, you do not ask me why. And I almost said, why? She told me I didn't have to do 90 meetings in 90 days because that wasn't in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, but she told me we would determine how many meetings I could do because I came through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous married with a 2.5-year-old child, 3.5-year-old child, and with a full-time job. And she said it was time for me to be responsible in all areas of my life. So we determined the number of meetings I was going to make on a regular basis. And she said, and if you can't do that, get you another sponsor. I thought, oh, what an order. I can't go through with it. She told me I was going to leave the men in Alcoholics Anonymous alone, that they were doing quite well before I walked through the doors. And if I couldn't do that, get another sponsor. She told me I was going to keep the focus on myself. It wasn't none of my business what my husband was doing. He had been doing it while I was out there. And why should it change now? That I was going to go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I did. I know one night I told Bob I couldn't go to a meeting because I needed to spend quality time with my daughter. And Bob said, you don't have to worry about it. You don't know what quality time is. And she doesn't like you anyway. And you need to come go along with us because we tolerate your insanity. Never had sweet talking people. You know, tonight when I came into the meeting earlier at 5 o'clock, I was getting ready to sit over somewhere. And Mary Ann said, sit down here. And I said, yes. I remember when I first came in the fellowship, I always used to sit in the back. You know, you can sit in the back. You think nobody sees you. And you can sit back there and scope out who's here and who's your next conquest. And I was told to sit up front, and so I came to an anniversary real late, and there's about as many people in this anniversary as there is tonight. And this guy stood up, and he says, I'm looking for Sharon. And it looked like everybody turned around and pointed at me. And he said, we saved you a seat up front. And he said, we put you up here because that's where the sick ones sit. And you are so sick, you should always sit up front. Any meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. Never again did I come late. Never again did I come, you know. Didn't like to shake hands when I came through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't like you. And I didn't want to know your name. Didn't understand why you wanted to know mine. And I just didn't want to do it. But I learned to do it because I would try to hide behind my sponsor and she would introduce me. A lot like Francis has been doing all over the place today. But today I love to go in the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and shake hands. It puts me at ease. I don't know what it does for you, but it makes me feel a part of. But I started working with this woman, and we went through the steps. And I didn't know how to be a mother, and so I had a woman in my life that was a mother, and she taught me how to be a mother. I didn't know how to be a wife, but I had a couple in my life that I thought just had a perfect relationship, whether they did or not. What I saw, I liked. And so I'd call her, and she helped me become a wife. I didn't know how to go to work when I came through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I had a sponsor that said, get up and get dressed.
And I'd get dressed, and she said, "Now go to work." And she said, because, see, I was so sick, I called her after all these things. You know, she said, "Get dressed and call me," and I'd call her. She said, "Now go to work and call me," and I'd call her. "Let me speak to your supervisor." Well, man, was I ticked. You know, "Don't you trust me?" I'm so trustworthy. And then I learned to go to work every day. I had parents that I loved dearly today that I didn't know. I didn't know how to be a daughter. And I learned to do that by just suiting up and showing up one day at a time, by being there when they needed me, by going to their house and talking to them and not needing to ask for something. Because that was what I always did. "Mom, I need some money. Mom, I need this. Mom, I need that." And I learned to go and listen to them and talk to them. And I'm so very grateful that you all taught me how to do that. Because I had about 15 years of sobriety, and my mother got real sick. And she was diabetic, and she had a stroke. And while she was in the nursing home that she had to go to, she had a grandma seizure. She stayed in that for an hour and a half. And so she went in a coma. And she was in a coma for a year and a half. And during that period, I was delegate for our area. And during that period, I had my commitments in Alcoholics Anonymous, so I had to go do that, you know. And so it kept me busy. It kept me out of me. But right when it happened, I had to get outside help, because I had lost a lot of people in the fellowship prior to her getting sick, and I had never grieved it, because I always said I had the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and I can get through anything. So I never grieved. And so when my mother got sick, I got depressed. And I started turning inward again. And I started sitting in these rooms and listening to you people, and I started leaving mentally. You know. So my sponsor and I, we went through the steps again, and it didn't change. So she told me to go. I needed to get outside help. And I went to the psychiatrist, and I'll tell you how it was. I went to the psychiatrist, and I told this woman, "I am not a long-term therapy patient." And she told me, "And I'm not a long-term therapist." She said, "I believe in working on your problem, giving you certain actions to take, and you go on about your life, and I'll go help somebody else that needs it." I thought, dog, Alcoholics Anonymous again. But she helped me. She helped me identify a lot of things, and we worked through them. And you know, what I learned when my mother was real sick was acceptance. Because my mom, they would call me and say, "Your mother's, get here, she's dying." And I'd get there, and Mom didn't die. I learned how strong somebody's faith can be. Because my mother was a very religious person, and she just didn't want to let go. And my father wouldn't let her go. They had been married for 50 years. And Dad would go to the nursing home 8 hours a day. And I used to go in at near the end, and I'd say, "Mom, let go. Just let go." You know. By the time she did pass away, I was okay. I was okay, because I knew she was in a better spot. And I was there to be with my father, and I was able to plan the funeral myself, and I was able to do all the things that I knew my mother wanted. And then my father decided to climb into the bottle of alcohol. And he did that for about a year. And one day he had DTs, and I told him, I said, "Daddy, you scare me. You know, you're dying, you scare me." And Daddy said, "Okay, I won't drink anymore." My father put down the drink. He hasn't had a drink in 6 years. I said, "I just looked at him." I said, "Now, Daddy, you want to know about the disease of alcoholism. People told me I was going to die, and my thought was, well, I have to die from something. Might as well be this. I tell you that you scare me, and you're going to die. You put down drinking and I'm worried about it since. You weren't an alcoholic. You were just trying to cover up your grief." My father is 84 years old. He's a trip. We have a lot of fun together. I talk to him every day. I go over and see him every other day. I mean, he's, you know, I just pray every day when he gets in a car and starts driving. I won't ride with him, but I pray. But, you know, I give him to God, because, he's on loan to me from God. So I give him to God every day. And so far, I hope I can get around like that at 84. In fact, I hope I get around 54 some days. But I became a daughter, you know, and I'm a mother, and my daughter loves me, and I love her, and we talk, and we share, and we have a relationship because of you all, and she tells me things I don't want to know. But she has experiences, and because of the kind of life I lived, I can share my experience, strength, and hope with her when she gets involved in some of these relationships, and I don't judge her. I just tell her, this is what happened to me, you know, and she's got so much sense. God, at 25, I wish I'd have had it. But it's because you helped me raise it. Everything I have in my life is a direct result of being active and involved in Alcoholics Anonymous, because once I hit that spiritual bottom and I started doing all the things I wanted to do, I haven't been out of Alcoholics Anonymous since. I'm right in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't want to be around Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't want to be a visitor to Alcoholics Anonymous. I am in Alcoholics Anonymous whether you want me here or not. You know, I go places. I go everywhere I want to go. I go to all kinds of meetings. I'm still active in service. I said I'm a past delegate now. I'm the wreckage of the past. But they don't let me sit. You know, I was in charge of our convention for 3 years, and now I'm secretary of my home group. Everybody found out all of a sudden I'd never been secretary. So I'm secretary of my home group, but that's the way I want to be. You've taught me how to keep commitments. You've taught me how to be responsible. I believe that you've raised me to be everything my parents were trying to raise me to be, but I just couldn't get it when they did it, and it's nothing, no reflection on them. They're good people. They are very good people. But you've taught me to be a responsible, productive member of society. Not only have you taught me to do that, you've taught me to enjoy doing it. You know, I like getting up in the morning. You know, and what it is today, I get up and I hit my knees most of the time. I'm not going to say all the time. But I hit my knees, and when I do, I ask God to help me to stay sober physically, mentally, spiritually, and emotionally on an everyday basis. Because, see, even one of those can knock me out. You know, and I ask Him to let me be of help to somebody, in or out of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. To let me live my life the way He wants me to live it. To let me walk my life the way He wants me to walk it. To let me be an example to those that are around me that life is good. You know, I just enjoy living today because of you. I want to thank you for everything you've given me. I've heard people say, thank you for giving me back your life. I want to thank you for not giving me back my life. I want to thank you for giving me a new way of living. I want to thank you for giving me a future, because at one point in time I thought there was none. I want to thank you for allowing me to get up every morning and want to see what it's going to be like. I want to thank you especially for the God of my own understanding who walks with me every day, who's not out there, He's in here. You know, I can call on Him at any time. I'm never lonely. I may be alone, but I'm never lonely, because I can always talk to God, and my God and I are on a first name basis. You know, the committee is quiet today. I definitely want to thank you for that. And when it starts acting up, I know that I'm not doing something in Alcoholics Anonymous, so I get out and do something. I want to thank you for the women that you've allowed me to sponsor and that have taught me so much. I get all the people that are like me, angry, intellectual, trying to figure it out, you know, and I love them. And I love to see the miracle happen. I love to see the eyes change. I love to see the head go up just a little bit more. I like to see them say that they're proud of being who they are, whatever that is. I don't talk about anybody's lifestyles or anything. That's not my job. The only thing I am is an alcoholic. And the only thing I can tell you about is the disease of alcoholism. And the only thing that I have, anything that I know about, is out of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I have a group of women. We get together every other Monday, and we go through the Big Book. We've gone through the Big Book. We're now on the traditions. This should be fun. And I told them after the traditions, we're going to the service manual. And you should hear them. I said, we're all going to learn about 12 concepts. And they go, the what? There's 36 principles in Alcoholics Anonymous. There's the 12 traditions, the 12 steps, and the 12 concepts. There are 36 principles, and I try my best to be an example of every one of them. I want to thank you for asking me here. I want to thank you for listening. And I just want to thank you for being Alcoholics Anonymous. And please, let's all keep it the way it is. I want my daughter to know, if she ever comes through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, that she's in Alcoholics Anonymous. I want anyone who has a problem with alcohol to know that we have the solution. You know, and we have the answer. We don't have the answer to their life, but we have the answer to alcoholism. And if they work on the steps of alcoholism, they'll change their life. You know, I don't know about you, but it gets better. You know, I'm still looking forward to seeing what I'll be when I grow up. You know, and I plan to be around a while. I want to ask you to do one thing for me, and I wasn't going to bring this up, but I need all the prayers I can have. I'm going to have foot surgery next week, next Friday. Just remember about 7:30 on Friday. Just give me some prayers. I haven't had to have any major stuff done in a long time, and it's I don't do not doing well. And they've already told me I'm not going to do for at least 2 weeks. I'm saying a week. The doctor said 2 weeks, and some other people said it'll be longer than that. So pray for the people around me, too.
I want to thank you. You saved my life. You taught me a new way of living. You've given me a reason for living. And I just want to tell all of you, it does work, and I love you. Thank you.
Right.